Hope you are having a wonderful day wherever you are listening to this podcast. I'm excited to have you here and share with you my conversation with Dr. Enrico Nolatti. And Enrico and I, today we talk about how to survive domesticity. If you're listening and you have kids, or if you're planning to have kids, there is a ton of value in today's conversation where we talk about what happens when you have kids, why a lot of marriages and couples suffer in the relationship when kids come into the picture, and how to combat that. And then we also talk about conversational narcissism. So even if you don't have kids, you're going to want to listen to that. You can skip forward to the mid part of the episode and find a lot of value in what to do if your partner or maybe a friend or a colleague always seems to revert to themselves when you're in conversation. And lastly, we finish up with the importance of attention and recognizing your partner's bids for connection when they are trying to reach for you, and how to recognize that and connect on a deeper level. And Enrico is a clinical psychologist based in Pasadena, California, and affiliate professor of psychology at Seattle University. He has extensive knowledge in helping people flourish in their relationships. You got to check out his book, Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. I really enjoyed this conversation with Enrico. I know you guys will too. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy today's show. Hi, Enrico. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
I'm glad to participate.
In the pre-show, we talked about some of the topics that I was excited to go over today. We're going to cover a few kind of different things, but some things that we haven't focused on necessarily recently in a podcast episode. And I thought a great one for us to start with would be surviving domesticity. And we're going to talk about what that is. And I think a cool place to start would be you sharing why you like talking about this, because you put that as a topic suggestion. So obviously it's something you're encountering. You think it's important to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most robust findings in social science research is that after the birth of a child, marital satisfaction plummets for about 2/3 of couples. And that's certainly reflects my own personal experience as a married guy and a father. And I'm also a psychologist and see tons of clients, couples, and that is sort of a common complaint, that sort of sex drops off the map, arguments increase, you sort of become expert co-parents, and oddly, in the process, drift apart, not necessarily because you're falling out of love. I would say that it's just a sort of a unavoidable kind of alienation creep that just descends upon a marriage. And if couples aren't aware of that, that it is a normative, expectable process, and really double down on the need to like put time aside for each other, with each other. Yeah, something that is actually normal can be seen as abnormal, and couples can all of a sudden feel like they're incompatible, when in actual fact, it's just a kind of an adaptation to parenthood that really needs to be faced in ways that I cover in my book. And I can talk more about that if you want, Chase. I mean, I can give you very practical advice and ideas about how to adjust to that.
Yes, I want to get into how we can combat this. But first, I want to share just a little personal story that it was 2 years after Sarah and I's daughter was born, Stella, and we realized we hadn't had a night away from her together. I had been away, you know, traveling for some things for 2 years, you know, and so that word that you used of creep, and it surprised the heck out of us. And we were like, yeah, we need to do it. And it was very rejuvenating to have that time away from her and more so, not away from her, but more so to connect as a couple and not as parents. And it's such an interesting thing too. Like, you assume a new identity. You become, now you're not just a husband and you're not just a wife. Now you're a mother and a father. And it almost out of necessity supersedes the husband and wife thing for a period of time. So it's such an interesting thing to notice it. And I want to hear from you how we can combat that and make sure we keep a healthy balance.
Yeah, I think for out of the gate, it's important to once again kind of normalize that so that couples don't go to a place of panic when they experience it. I mean, I remember in the early days, you know, like it was 2 years old that you're daughter was before. I think it was more in the realm of about like 5 years for my wife and I to get away. And I remember then, I mean, just so like looking at each other, like, you know, like we were literally strangers, and a kind of an awkwardness and a fumbling around trying to find things to talk about. But I have to say, I mean, that I think couples need extended time so that they can get beyond that awkwardness. So if it's just these short date nights, 2-3 hours here and there, a lot of couples can't get beyond just the expectable awkwardness. And so I would advise, like, you know, when couples start to kind of really prioritize their marriage and try to step back from parenthood, that they allocate adequate time and expect that it's going to be awkward. And that at a certain point, you know what, if they had a good relationship to start out with, they'll rediscover that with enough time and enough intentionality. And don't panic. Just kind of wait it out and bring your best self to the interaction.
What you said about normalizing it is so important. And to me, that's a close cousin to having awareness around it, like this conversation. And so if you know, it's like, it's okay to be a mother, to be a father, and let that supersede the relationship. Obviously, for the first weeks, month, the child's there, you're sharing love. Make space if you can, but having that awareness that it'll creep up on you. And next thing you know, it's 5 years, you know, so.
There's another form of love, Chase, I think, that it's important to recognize that we find, and it's a kind of a non-narcissistic form of love, that we love our partner for the kind of mother they are, that we love our partner for the kind of father they are, and that you derive vicarious satisfaction from that. And in order to have that psychological experience, I think you have to kind of contain your own needs as a person. And have a psychological capacity to say, wow, I love this woman who is such a good mother to my child. I love this, you know, man who's a father to my child. And to derive some kind of loving satisfaction from that experience. And it's a mature psychological experience, but I think that it is, in my estimation, it's one aspect of what I call flourishing love, you know, in my book, Flourishing Love. Yeah.
That's a beautiful perspective. I want to ask you, let's say we have someone listening and they are pregnant, they're expecting their first child or second or third, whatever, but certainly the first is everything's new, or they want kids in the future. What are some actionable things that they can think about to have in place rather than playing catch up once, you know, they're like, hey, it's been a year.
Once again, Chase, go into it with that sentimentalized notion. Don't be massively discouraged from what everybody's telling you. Like, it will de-sex your marriage. you'll have shitty sleep. You will, you know, that your partner who was once your erotic person that you turned to will be a boring roommate. You know, like, just expect all of that. But realize that it is a phase. In a good marriage, it is a phase that you will go through. And so go into it with your eyes wide open. Start to realize that you will probably now be entering a phase of your marriage where sex is going to be less spontaneous and kind of has to be planned. Where, and this is going to, I'm making these gross generalizations right now, but they're more true than untrue, I think, that the female partner will start, their sexuality will start to be more responsive. In other words, they may not have an arousal process like their male partner has, at least in a heterosexual marriage, where they'll be turned on and want to have sex. They're more likely to be turned on if they feel like they're being talked to nicely. If there's an equitable household chore, domestic upkeep arrangement, be nice to me and that'll turn me on. I may get aroused in the act of having sex, not as a prelude to wanting sex. That's all normal. A lot of couples kind of the wheels come off because they cling to the desire for a spontaneous sex life like they once had, where there's this charge, this erotic charge that they bring to each other spontaneously out of nowhere. That's more rare than common. And that you kind of have to adapt to that, and you kind of have to make the best out of it. And that you have to be militant around spending time, just something as simple as allocating time together, and making that sort of a well-oiled machine, a ritualized part of one's day. Maybe it's later in the evening when the kid or kids are put to bed, and that becomes sacred time, where you just, you know what, maybe it's cocktail hour later in the day, maybe it's watching the news or a favorite show together, but something that you do in common where there's a mutual feeling of reconnecting, and making that, ritualizing that. And then one last point, and then I'll be quiet. You know, not everybody's close to their extended family. It takes a village. And this is where, you know, in my book, I look at kind of a secular versus a religious perspective on marriage. And I'm a big believer in, you know, like, that one of the problems with a moral religious framework for marriage is that there's this big focus on the family and not reaching out into the community to kind of get support, family supports, right? I actually think the reverse needs to be true, that it takes a village, and that we need to cultivate trusted, trustworthy other adults that are quasi-parents, you know? And that could be somebody in the family, or that could be a friend, or that could be a coach, or that could be a preschool teacher or a current teacher that you're hiring on the side to look after your kid. So from day one, I would advise new parents to target adults that they cultivate relationships with who can give that, who can be a substitute parents that can, step in to take care of their kids, to free up the adults to actually have a marriage or a marital time.
I love those points. And one of the things that I think about having become a father and to an 8-year-old is, I mentioned a bit earlier, but how much my identity has shifted and not. And I think it's important, like, I love being a dad, and I think of myself as a dad, and also remembering the non-dad, like, you know, like, it's not how I define myself. And I think especially for women, because it biologically changes so much, and it's so much more intense, especially the early years. And when we're relating, to remember that version of yourself from before you were a parent in relating with your partner that way. And that's where going on a date, or if you can, a weekend, and really dropping in as the non-parent version of yourself, because we all wear these different identities, right? And I think that the death of a relationship as it relates to this is, as you say, like the domesticity. And as a man, I feel like it's just like when you become like the soccer dad and you're changing the diapers, and that's all beautiful. And I love that part of myself. But remembering, like, I don't want to say the more fun, but this other version that, yeah, it's more free. You know, you have the time to have spontaneous sex because there's not a kid in the living room. So if that means you can take one night on the weekend away and do that and remember that part of yourself, I think that's, I just feel like that's so important for us to remember. It's been super valuable in my own life.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. Women's health, especially PMS and perimenopause, has been one of those chronically neglected areas when it comes to research and solutions. Thankfully, we have today's sponsor, Happy Mammoth. Our sponsor, Happy Mammoth, saw that there were no effective nature-inspired solutions to these issues, so they made one. Estrocontrol. Relationship advice listeners can now get 15% off your entire order on happymammoth.com with our promo code IDO at checkout. Estrocontrol contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health. The way estrocontrol eases PMS is pretty interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that is where all of our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, some women may start having PMS symptoms, like spots on the skin, cravings, and feeling low all of a sudden. Estrocontrol was created to help women feel like themselves throughout the whole month. Estrocontrol is made especially for women who are premenopausal. It's really great for perimenopause when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS becomes really rough. I personally struggle from PMS firsthand, from super discomfort to just not feeling like myself. PMS has put me through the ringer time and time again, and I know it's not just me. I've seen my relationship suffer in those times when PMS takes over. Estrocontrol works to relieve many of those consuming PMS symptoms, helping us regain control. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with a promo code IDO at checkout. That's happymammoth, MAMMOTH.com, and use the promo code IDO for 15% off your first order. After a decade of hosting this podcast and talking to hundreds of experts, we know that money is one of the biggest stressors in relationships. Now, while worrying about money and anxiously awaiting payday doesn't help, Earnin actually does, by putting the money you earn in your hands today. Our sponsor, Earnin, is an app that gives you access to your pay-as-you-work up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an additional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Many couples end up fighting about finances, especially when surprise costs arise. Earnin allows you to seamlessly deal with the unexpected trip to the vet or that splurge on date night without the added stress, letting you both focus on what really matters. Earnin is helping millions of Americans feel self-sufficient and to worry and fight less about money. All of this without debt traps, mandatory fees, or credit checks. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in relationship advice under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. That's relationship advice under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
I would add to that that I actually define love or an aspect of love in a marriage as each partner trying to free up the other to have individual lives and pursuits with the things that matter to them. So that mutual support to break away from family life and have pursuits that are personally rewarding. That's what I mean. That's at the heart of some of the arguments I make in my book. That's how I define flourishing love. It's a mutual happiness project. Not the moral religious perspective tends to be one of joint self-sacrifice. I flip that and say, no, we are in this to have a reciprocal relationship where you're going to support me in the ways that matter to me, and I'm going to support you in the way that matters to me. If I got that right, I think you're right.
But
it's like, you know, like in my marriage, you know, I'm a writer. And so for years and years and years, I'll go away for a week and I'm off the grid and I'm unreachable. And my wife has always supported that. And I've done that any number of times. She'll go away on yoga retreats a week. I support that. She has friends that she goes away with 2-3 days at a time. So the things that matter to her, we have this bedrock reciprocal support. And I think that is one way to think of a loving arrangement. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And yeah, it becomes even more important when you have kids involved, because that's just another thing that's taking up time. And, if you can go to your wife and be like, hey, you know, I know you've been super busy at home with the kids. Why don't you take the weekend to go on that trip you've been talking about with your friends? Like, what a beautiful act of love to give your partner, and how that's going to fill up their cup and make your relationship thrive and flourish, as you say.
Well, ironically, I often hear, and this is true in my marriage, that when that other partner leaves town, and then returns, it's like, you know, it was so much, my daughter, my son was so much easier to deal with you gone. I mean, I hear that a lot. And it's like, what's that about? Well, it takes away these, so in other words, it can actually be a win-win. I get my alone time and wow, I have a better relationship with my kid because there's not these weird jealousies and competition for attention. What Freud called the Oedipal complex, where kids are trying to pit parents against each other and win the attention of one and throw the other one under the bus and divide and conquer and all that, you know, kind of underbelly, ugly underbelly of parenting. It's like that just gets shaved right off the, you know, the situation sometimes or oftentimes.
I love it. There's so much value in what we're talking about here. And I want to take a little bit of a 90-degree turn, because I want to get to another topic that you suggested that I really love, and that is conversational narcissism and this idea that you describe as, in conversation, the back to me now attitude of someone you're in conversation with. And this can be with a friend, a colleague, romantic partner. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like and how we can navigate it?
Yeah. I mean, for people who read my book, I don't know if you're going to, the book is called Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. So in the book, I this was during COVID, I interviewed this lead researcher on her research on conversational narcissism. And it was fascinating. Because, you know, conversational narcissism, and by conversational narcissism, it's sort of like you say, Chase, a back to me kind of form, like having your answers prepared before the other person is even finished, not really paying attention, ignoring, like even being tangential, like your partner sharing something personally meaningful about their day, and you kind of being cluelessly changing the subject, like, did you remember to drop the car off at the garage to get the tires changed? Like, is that a tangent from what the other? So there's different ways in which conversational narcissism can play out, but there's high correlations between that and divorce. So the remedy for that, you know, like Simone Weil, the French philosopher, has a famous quote along the lines of, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Especially in the digital age, social media, the temptation to be on the cell phones, distracted by shiny objects. So the ability to like really dial in a conversation and show true curiosity about the other person's experiences, and they may be just sharing simple things about their day, I actually define that as love at the granular level. Especially as we get older, the ability to kind of like really dial in during a conversation, I define as a form of love and an aspect of flourishing love. And I think this may sound a little sexist, but I could give the research foundations, that especially for women who may have what Deborah Tannen, the sociolinguist, used to call a stylistic form of communicating that's around rapport, like sharing to feel close, sharing to feel connected, talking, listening, that all of that has great value interactionally for women, maybe more so than men. So men may need to up their game more in terms of like really being careful in conversations to not default to a kind of a masculine model of transactional, logical ways of communicating and tuning in at a logical, concrete level instead of, you know, tuning in at a kind of an emotional level where they're really paying attention to underlying feelings and you know, even simple, yeah, like we're doing right now, Chase, nodding of heads. The viewers can't see us nodding our heads at each other, but all the very small, simple ways where you show that you're paying attention have great value, I think, in a loving relationship.
I think it's more important than most of us realize, and such a beautiful point that you're bringing up. And I know I feel loved when a friend or a partner is paying attention almost more than anything. And as you said, especially in the digital world, and it could be as simple as I saw this, it was like a TED talk and the guy is holding his cell phone in his hand. He's not looking at it. He's just holding it and talking. And he invited the audience to just notice how they feel. And then he put it down and he talked. And it's very clear watching this video, like he cares more about what he's saying and he's giving his attention when the phone is not in his hand. And that's a very actual example of like, is the phone on your kitchen table when you're having family dinner? Put it away, because it's sending a subconscious signal of my work, my social media, whatever is more important or as important, and I want to be ready in case anything comes through, instead of you have my full attention because you're the most important person right now because you're the one in front of me. And it's little things like that.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. When you work full-time, have kids, and run a podcast, it's hard to make time for a multiple-step skincare protocol. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. Let me repeat it. They make it easy. No complicated routine, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. If you're looking for skincare products that are simple and effective, for a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase when using the code IDO when you check out at oneskin.co. I've been using OneSkin's body lotion for about a month, and I've already seen noticeable improvements with small wrinkles and textures on my skin, specifically on the back of my neck and the back of my hands, two places where I get a lot of sun. Plus, my skin looks and feels healthier all around. It's all thanks to OneSkin's revolutionary OS-01 peptide, the first ingredient proven to deactivate aging cells responsible for lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. Unlike traditional skincare products that only mask symptoms, OneSkin pioneered a new approach, integrating tissue engineering and cutting-edge science to enhance skin biology for lasting resilience against aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code IDO at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code IDO. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support your show and tell them we sent you. Hey, Love Tribe, I have just a few questions for you. I want to know why you are here listening to the podcast. Are you here because you want to stop bickering with your partner and you want to feel truly heard? Or are you looking for ways to reignite your sex life? Or do you want to feel more emotionally connected with your partner? Or do you just long for those fun, giggly moments of connection that you used to have at the beginning of your relationship? Well, over the last decade of hosting this podcast, those were the main reasons people tuned into the show. And we get it. We've been there. So we created our course, Spark My Relationship, because we wanted to put those tools to unlocking a fulfilling relationship right in your hands. We're offering $100 off our course, Spark My Relationship, which is a self-paced course designed to help you create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner and have an amazing time doing it. We've collaborated with over 15 therapists and psychologists to bring you the strategies that marriage therapists teach their clients. So to unlock this special offer of our course, our listeners can visit sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock to get $100 off. That's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock.
I think it's one of the reasons why there's a great demand for therapy in the country right now. Imagine, I mean, every day of the week I'm in my office and when I see new clients, just kind of the opening line, like, what brings you here? What's on your mind? And, you know, I've been at this for 30, 40 years doing therapy. And actually these days, just asking an open-ended question and showing true, deep, genuine curiosity for someone's inner life and inner experiences, the exuberance that clients often manifest at that, it's telling. I mean, I think it reflects about how, you know, there's this great joke about, wow, you know, we shouldn't be talking about the epidemic of attention deficit disorder. We should be talking about the epidemic and deficit and attention disorder. Like we have an epidemic and just not really paying attention to each other. And when that trickles down into a marriage, it can be deeply problematic.
100%. And one of the other things that's related to this that I love to mention is paying attention to the small bits for connection, because that's related to this. And I just saw this example of a partner will share, hey, honey, you know, I had lunch today with an old high school friend. It was really nice. And what that is it's a bid for connection. It's not that they necessarily want to tell you exactly what was going on with that old friend from high school. It's they want you to be like, oh, wow, that's super cool. Tell me more about it. What went on? And that's how we relate. But when our attention is spread, or when we just don't have awareness, or when we try to make it about ourselves, oh yeah, I had lunch with a friend, or I'm going to, you know, it's like, no, they want to connect with you. And
yeah,
it's important to pay attention.
I think it's an act of love to remember the things that matter to your partner. and to ask questions that are kind of tap those things. Like, you know, hey, whatever happened to your friend Mary? I remember last week you told me that she, you know, she had that health concern. What came of that? So to be able to remember and follow up, I mean, that, you know, just in targeted, attuned kind of ways, I think that's the opposite of conversational narcissism.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I notice in myself, I really try to make an effort to do that with my partner, friends, family, of remembering. And I think it's because it comes somewhat naturally, but I think it's because I like it so much for myself. And, you know, often we give what we desire to receive. And it's interesting, like, that how much when I pay attention to it, and it feels good to give. You know, I love getting a gift. I have this thing where, like, someone will mention, like, oh, I've been wanting to read that book, or like something like that. And it's really easy for me to remember. I'll be like, boom, that's your, you know, Christmas present. I got, you know, I made a note of it. And I love doing that. And I love feeling that. And it's such a beautiful and simple thing, but you got to pay attention.
But that tells me, Chase, that you're well aware of the reciprocal nature of love, which is what I write a lot about in my book, that you get what you give and you give what you get, that there's always this balancing out. It's not about joint self-sacrifice and what if I, you know, keeping score along the lines of all the hard work that I've put in that you haven't. That model, which I think is tied to agape love and the moral religious tradition, there's an alternative model that I write about in my book, and it's exactly what you just said there, Chase. It's like there's where guilt. We were going to talk about guilt. Guilt can be a healthy emotion. It can signal you that, oh my God, I'm not giving as much as I'm getting. I need to pay attention to that guilt. My partner has been generous in the ways that I need him or her or them to be generous. And I kind of need to step up because I'm getting more than I'm giving. And I think that's healthy to pay attention to that kind of guilt.
I love it. And I got to read your book because I love these themes. And I'm thinking of a return to love. And a big theme that I got from that book was what we're talking about. Give what you want to receive. And often we wait for the friend to invite us for lunch because it takes vulnerability and courage mm-hmm. to extend ourselves to our partner and say, you know, I'm gonna reach out. And even though, you know, I feel more comfortable just waiting, and we may be met with disappointment, but it's like, you know, it's better to have loved than to never have loved at all. And on a micro level and macro. And so I would encourage people to, if you want to connect with your partner more, if you want more love in your relationship, don't wait for them to take action. And that's kind of the beauty of this, or a friendship or a family member, is that we can control our destiny to a point. We can't control others, but certainly if we want something to flourish, it starts with us, our own work and extending ourselves and doing it over and over. Obviously, there's a point where there's toxic traits, whatever. We mm-hmm. have to assess those situations, but really, I've found it super valuable and enriching in all my relationships in my life to try to be courageous and put myself out there over and over.
Yeah. And then to see how there's a reciprocal kind of dimension of it. I mean, here's an example. Like, my father-in-law passed away about 2 or 3 years ago. And I had in the last 2 or 3 years of his life, I was very involved in kind of taking care of him and being a good friend to him in ways that maybe my wife couldn't be because of their history together. So I stepped in, and she was deeply appreciative of me doing that. And he died, and now my mother is in her 90s, and, you know, I have a difficult relationship with my mother. And of her own accord, my wife has totally stepped up spontaneously, desirously, intentionally, and wanting to be a good daughter-in-law to my mother in her final whatever weeks, months, years, of her own accord. And that the reciprocal nature of that is deeply registered for me as a form of love, a form of loyalty, a form of deep reciprocal appreciation. And it's those themes that I want to bring back to marriage, which is why I wrote the book, to take a look at, you know, marriage is in decline right now. A lot of people are cynical about marriage in our culture. I mean, fewer than 20% of U.S. adults right now believe that marriage is essential for a fulfilling life. There's a lot of marital cynicism right now. And in my book, I write about how I think that that's because there's too much moral religious baggage attached to marriage. And I think we need to get away from that and try to think in secular ways about marriage along the lines that we've been talking about this morning in terms of reciprocity and mutual happiness and a concern for that, and from a place of desire, not moral duty, because you want to be the best loving version of yourself and you want to bring out the best loving version of your partner from a place of, once again, desire, not moral duty. And we need more of these ideas, I think, in the culture right now to kind of revive and resuscitate marriage.
I love that. And I think we've taken a nice step today of putting those ideas out into the world through our listeners on this podcast. So thank you so much, Enrico, for covering these topics and for continuing to put this information out into the world. Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online, and then we'll say goodbye?
Yeah, just Google my name. It's a difficult one. Enrico, which is Italian for Henry, E-N-R-I-C-O, and then Naulati. Last name is spelled G-N-A-U-L-A-T-I. I have a website, and you can access me that way. And thank you so much, Chase. You've been such a gracious host. It's been so easy to chat.
Oh, well, thank you for coming on. We'll have those links in our show notes and on our website. And yeah, thanks again for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into today's episode. As always, all the links to the guest, as well as any of their recommendations, will be in the show notes page. You can find the link to that in the episode description or by going to idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab up at the top and you will have access to all the episodes that we've ever done. There are over 300 of them. And while you're on our website, if you haven't checked out our free 14-day Happy Couple Challenge, we really hope you do. It's a free email challenge that we send to you. It's 14 days of fun, easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And if you're looking for something that provides a little more help with working on your relationship, whether it's improving intimacy or communication with your partner, or just bringing the spark back, we would love for you guys to check out our online course, Spark My Relationship. We're offering $100 off to all of our listeners if you go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. We've worked with over 15 psychologists and therapists to create the real life tools and strategies that they are teaching their clients. So we wanted to give them to you. It's a self-paced online course that can be done in as little as a month or up to 3 months. You can really decide how much or how little you want to do with your partner, or maybe just yourself. So we hope you guys check that out. It's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Have a great day.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.